Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's you, Jamie. Don't be alarmed, but I think there's a guy following you. Maybe we should get that guard dog we talked about? Nothing too scary. Maybe like a Bichon with an attitude? You know, Progressive's collision insurance covers injured dogs and cats at no extra cost, so... Wait, the guy stood up when I stood up. He's on the phone. He's looking right at me. Oh, wait, it's just my reflection. Don't tell anyone about this.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Pet coverage not available in New Hampshire and North Carolina.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Melodies.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Rain and Jays. Today, it's me, your boy, Jay King from MassLive.com. I will be joined by Ben Standig of CSN Mid-Atlantic and the Locked On Wizards podcast for a crossover episode. We get into Isaiah Thomas's big game two, rehashing the glory of his 53-point outburst. We talk about what the Wizards need to change, how much of an impact their bad bench has had, and what to expect for the rest of the series. Before we get to that, I just want to talk about Isaiah Thomas's new mentor, Kobe Bryant. Now, obviously, it's kind of a surprise. Bryant, the Lakers legend, apparently reached out to Thomas a couple of weeks ago after Thomas's younger sister passed away in a tragic car accident. Since then, Bryant has texted Thomas before and after every game. He has broken down film with Thomas, taught him different things to look at while watching film. And I think the biggest takeaway from all this is just that Isaiah has an unquenchable thirst for knowledge, and especially knowledge of how to become great. He has studied Tom Brady. He has studied Kobe from afar before this. He has studied even Bruce Lee to try to determine how to become as great as he can be, and learn from what separated those guys, what separated them in their craft, what allowed them to achieve greatness. And so I think that's the biggest thing. Obviously, Bryant is one of the most accomplished NBA players of all time. He is a super intelligent athlete. He can give Isaiah a different perspective of how to look at the game, how to break down that film, how to try to help the Celtics win games and push himself even forward, even more forward as a player. So it's really interesting to me to see how active Isaiah Thomas is about searching out knowledge and doing it from really as great players, the greatest players he can, the greatest figures that he can. And he picked Tom Brady's brain. He's now, you know, talking to Kobe on a regular basis. So that's one takeaway. Second takeaway, I always appreciate how candid Thomas is. You know, he's in awe of Kobe. He has always idolized Kobe Bryant, and it still seems surreal to him. And when he was recounting the story of how his mother was asking him who he was on the phone with, and he had to mute the phone and said, "Ma, it's Kobe." And then she kind of freaked out. He was already freaking out. But I appreciate the candid nature that he has. When he's hurting, we know. When he's when he's mad at someone, we know. When he doesn't like something that Brad Stevens does, even, we learn about it. And it's refreshing how candid he is. It's refreshing how accountable he is. A lot of things about that I appreciate, especially from the purpose of doing my job. It makes my job a lot easier. But far more importantly than that is it makes him seem more human. That he's so real about all his emotions, so honest about everything he's going through, whether it's with the pain of his sister or the awe of reaching out to Kobe Bryant and being able to pick Kobe Bryant's brain. So that was neat. Anyway, we'll get to the conversation I had with Ben Standig now and the Locked On Wizards podcast about what has been, really through two games, a very entertaining basketball series.
All right, welcome back to another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast. Ben Standig here, coming to you from the Verizon Center. The Wizards weren't technically here today, but Scott Brooks did talk. Today, the Celtics will be here any minute, and because of that, my guest here is here because of that, Jay King from MassLive.com. More importantly, for our purposes, he's also one of the co-hosts of the Locked On Celtics podcast, so took this opportunity for a crossover edition of the podcast. Jay, I know you've got to be super duper tired. Not only were you exhausted watching that epic game two, you had to file your story late, you had to somehow go to sleep, which is not easy. I know people think, I always think it's funny when people ask why are athletes out late after games. I'm like, because their work day just ended, and it's for them, it's 5 o'clock. You don't go to bed, you don't go leave work and go home and go to sleep. So it's sort of like that. But anyway, then you had to get up in the morning, come down here. So after all that, like just from the Boston perspective, from your life perspective, like how are you even feeling today having watched that game and having to dealt with everything that's gone on in the last few hours?
I'm tired, but man, it was a fun game. When you looked at these teams, the way they've disliked each other over the last 2 years and the way the matchups go up against each other with John Wall versus Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley versus Bradley Beal, just so many great matchups, so many players that play the same positions. You knew it was going to be a fun matchup in the first two games. Did not disappoint. Just neither team can stop each other. John Wall was just electric in both games, really. Obviously, the turnovers in game one, but game two, he was on another level. And then Isaiah Thomas, one of the better performances I've seen in the playoffs, just really an all-time performance with 29 points in the fourth quarter in overtime when the Celtics needed every single one of them. It was fun to watch. And these two teams, like, they're so angry at each other. They really dislike each other, but they also can't stop each other. So it's not like a mucky series where these guys are plugging away at each other and nobody can score. It's like they're chirping at each other, they're shoving each other, they're in some cases hurting each other, and they still can't stop each other. So it's got both the like bad blood and the great fast paced style that's just a lot of fun to watch. So it's been a fun series so far, and I know you Wizards fans don't want to hear about how fun it's been, but both games have been really entertaining.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's like they think they're all like Pat Riley era Knicks, but without the actual ability to stop anybody. It is fascinating to watch on so many levels.
Do you think Markieff Morris will get in an altercation every single playoff series the Wizards play forever?
I'll tell you what. You know, it's funny because you know obviously he had the issues in Phoenix.
Yeah.
And you don't quite know what you're getting when you come here, and you know, but people, some of his former teammates like Marcin Gortat is on the team. He said, "Oh, he's a good guy, great." And but we didn't quite know what we were going to get. And when you talk, so when you we all started to talk to him when he came over from the trade, I mean, you can tell his intensity level is at like an 8 at all times. I mean, it's always feels like he's ready to go, and he's a cool guy. He's been really cool, yeah. But just the intensity is there. We don't trigger it because we're not stupid.
It was funny because he was like, "Yeah, I don't think Horford did it intentionally. Like, probably not." And then a minute into game two, he was made it clear he did not appreciate getting injured on Horford's foot. He is
He's definitely a character, and the Celtics just rub people the wrong way too. So it's fun, man. The tempers and the personalities just clash.
Well, and that's the thing. Everybody focuses on the funeral game, but there was a game earlier in the year when I know at least Otto Porter suggested that Boston played a dirty style and somewhat so. And then you had last year Jay Crowder and Randy Whitman got into it. So yeah, so this has been going on for a little bit. And that's the thing. Like, you know, towards the end of the regular season, people are jockeying for seeds, and everybody here was like, okay, well, the Wizards better off Cleveland or Boston. I'm sort of like, well, obviously you don't want to play LeBron until you have to. But part of me was like, but you know what, though? When the Celtics take that intensity up, I don't know if the Wizards can totally match it. You have Markieff Morris, which is why it was so huge for him to play even beyond the power forwardy stuff. But he brings that intensity. But, you know, the Celtics have, you know, Crowder and Smart. And I don't know if Horford is necessarily the most intense guy, but, you know.
Bradley and then Thomas. He's not obviously the defensive talent. But he loves it when games get chippy, yeah. and then he starts barking at people. I mean, you could see him every bucket. He was staring down Markieff Morris, even if Markieff Morris wasn't involved in the play.
Yeah. It
was
like, I know they showed a good. I don't know if you could see it, but I think it was not the 3-point play, but after the play before that when he got on Morris and they were going back down the court and Thomas was just staring at Morris. Morris wouldn't look at him. Yeah. You know, I'm sure he knew. He knew what was what. So much to sort of take in from that game. But I guess let me ask you this. We just talked to Scott Brooks. Among the questions, so how do you stop Isaiah Thomas? And his response was essentially, well, we've tried everything except for a triple team. So look for that in game three. But I don't really know if they double teamed him that much. I don't know if it would even matter that much. So I guess as somebody who's been watching them play all year, what if anything has anybody done to slow him down at all?
That's been kind of the most remarkable thing about this year, is that nobody's found a way. Like in the past, especially like in the playoffs last year when they played the Atlanta Hawks, the Hawks sent tons of attention at him. They forced him into bad decisions. They forced him into low shooting percentages. None of that stuff works anymore. He's worked on his game. He's figured out how to get what he wants no matter what. And I think having Al Horford is a huge difference. Having, now that they're going to the small lineups, having all those skilled guys is a huge difference. So now if you do double him, it's like, okay, I'll just throw it to Al Horford, and they'll have that kind of the Draymond Green fast break where he catches it in the pick and roll and they have a 4-on-3. There's really no way to stop him. The best way to stop him, I think, is to score on him and punish him at the other end. But when now the Celtics are having him guard Otto Porter, they have him guard Kelly Oubre when he's in the game. So it's not like the Wizards are punishing him on that end. Although they went to a ton of post ups early in game two, and he got in foul trouble, obviously, but didn't pick up another foul after that. So I don't think you can stop him. That is just, I say it all the time, it's a magical little man. Really, like, I don't know how he does it. He's 5'9". He finishes like there's no defense out there. It's unbelievable some of the shots he throws in.
Yeah. So, no, yeah. It's crazy. It was all the angles. I mean, he must have been in really good geometry. I mean, he really knows all the angles. It's crazy how he does it. And, you know, to go from the Wizards' perspective on this, like you mentioned earlier in the game, he got some fouls. He was going up against Wall and Beal at that point. Then they shift away from that. And the Wizards, I mean, this goes back to the offseason. Something I really thought they needed to get was another guy on the wing or a backcourt somewhere who could put the ball on the deck, get his own, create for others, whatever. They never quite got that guy. In theory, Brandon Jennings can do that on offense, but he's such a liability defensively that that's not really enough. If, you know, like Marcus Smart's definitely not a great offensive player, but Marcus Smart was on the Wizards, you could swap out Marcus Smart for Kelly Oubre, and then you're going to put Isaiah. I think you could probably have Marcus Smart pound Isaiah Thomas. Otto is just more or less a 3-point threat who can run off some curls, but he's not really going to back down Isaiah Thomas. And Kelly Oubre, you don't want the ball in his hands that much offensively. So that's kind of the dilemma the Wizards are in. They know what to do with it, but they just don't have the personnel. And I know all the people, the Wizards fans listening are going, yes, we know the bench stinks or there's not enough on the bench. And I hear you. But I'm just saying in this particular case, they just don't have that piece to burn them.
Is there anything you think they can do to make it so that the bench minutes aren't destructive? Because the starting lineup over 21 minutes in game two for Washington was +19. Like they were monsters whenever the starting lineup was out there. And then whenever even one bench guy's out there, whether it's Oubre, Bogdanovich, Jennings, Smith, it's like everything just crumbles. Is there anything they can do to kind of alleviate that those stretches so that it's not completely destructive?
I mean,
you sound so optimistic already.
You know, the weird part of the season was that after the All-Star break, the bench started actually playing better. They added Bogdanovich, who gave him a three-point threat. Jennings, for his flaws, keeps the pace going and can give four or five assists a game. But they had Jan Mahimi, who would help defensively to offset all the bad perimeter defenders and give them rebounding. And you know, he's not like an offensive threat, but he'd give you at least something to go to inside. The bench was actually more, I don't want to say they were more consistent than the starters the last 15 or so games, because that would be a bit of an overstatement, but the starters were kind of an issue. It was sort of the reverse. The bench was sort of holding on to leads, and the starters were sort of screwing around too much, especially defensively. Now Mahimi's out. He got hurt in the next to last game of the regular season, and now we've gone back to the beginning of the year where the starters, if the, you know, the Wizards are the world champs of the first quarter, but then they just can't, they just don't have enough. Now, they're coming back home. Role players typically play better at home. I'm going to assume that that'll probably happen for them, and maybe it'll go in reverse for Boston. The Wizards haven't lost, you know, only two games, but they won both games here against Boston. So you would think it would get better in that sense alone, but in the big picture sense, knowing you have to win at least one game in Boston, I don't know. I mean, it's crazy to say that I would love to see the Wizards or Scott Brooks go to Trey Burke. because there's a reason why they brought Brandon Jennings in the first place. But at least Trey Burke is a 40% three-point shooter this year. That's at least a tangible asset. Right now, Brandon Jennings doesn't seem like he's giving you any tangible assets. And the Jennings wall pairing is just a disaster. It is not peanut butter and jelly. It is peanut butter and sardines. It is awful. But he keeps sticking with it, partly because he doesn't really think he has anywhere else to go.
Yeah, and The Trey Burke thing, like calling for Trey Burke, it almost sounds like Chicago in the first round when it was like either Michael Carter-Williams, Jerian Grant, or Isaiah Cannon. And it was like not really any good options. And the Wizards bench has been their downfall for most of the season, obviously. The Celtics, what's been weird about the Celtics, not weird, but really interesting, is their bench has picked up in the playoffs. Like Terry Rozier, He shot 36.7% from the field during the regular season. The offense often cratered when he was on the court. And all of a sudden, it's just he's raining in threes. That huge three to tie the game in the final 2 minutes. He's the offensive player for defense offense substitutions down the stretch. It's like, what happened with Terry Rozier? And Brad Stevens is going to like super small lineups. They played one lineup with Marcus Smart at power forward with Avery Bradley, Isaiah, and Terry Rozier, and they're just using their speed. And this series is it's like the basketball is just on drugs, man. It's so fast paced. It just comes at you so quickly. It's like, bam, open three for one guy. Bam, open three for the other team. Bam, John Wall is doing something. Oh, here Isaiah's going wild, and then you got Avery Bradley getting hurt, and Otto Porter getting clubbed in the face, and it's like, just slow down a little bit.
Yeah,
let me breathe a little. Let me write a little bit. It's been some fun basketball. I mean, I am really enjoying watching this series. It's fun to watch. And the Celtics, I mean, six straight wins now. I'm not sure they've played better basketball all season. And they're using smaller and smaller lineups with Al Horford at the five. Amir Johnson in the starting lineup turned into a bit of a disaster. John Wall just picked them apart. And if you're not going to be able to defend them with Amir Johnson on the court, then he takes away from what they do offensively.
And I think right there, sort of the difference between these teams. Okay, fine, the starting power forward is not working. We'll go elsewhere, and he never has to play again. Whereas for the Wizards, it's kind of they just have to put Jason Smith and Kelly Oubre out there, even if and for the most part they both played reasonably well in game two, but you know, they don't always, it's not always the ideal matchup for them or whatever. Like in game one, they had Oubre out there when Morris got hurt and they just lobbed it over the top to Olynyk a couple times, and there wasn't too much the Wizards could do about that because, well, you want Oubre out there for other reasons, but where can you turn? As you're talking about this, and I started having a bigger picture question, because I got into this debate a lot around here. You know, the Wizards made a move for the trading deadline to get Bogdanovich. They gave up a first-round pick to do that, also to dump Andrew Nicholson's bad contract. Celtics did nothing. The Celtics have a, you know, I'm not telling you any secrets, but the Celtics have 1,000 picks over the next 2, 3, 10 years, whatever it is, some huge assets. And I get maybe they didn't want to trade the Brooklyn picks, which are considered the most, you know, the crown jewels of kind of what they have. But they have other picks, and yet they chose to do nothing. And I was sort of baffled by that, only because they were either going to be the one or the two seed most likely. Cleveland looked semi-vulnerable this year. We'll see. Maybe that's false. But and yet there were some deficiencies. I mean, like we're saying, only because the Wizards bench is struggling so much is Boston's bench able to maybe step up. Were you surprised, or can you understand why he didn't do anything? I'm not even saying go for Jimmy Butler, but he didn't even go for the Bogdanovich-y type of move, that one specific thing, whatever you think that might have been, that they need to maybe get that next level.
Yeah, it's funny. I talked about this on the podcast when they were down 2-0 to the Bulls. And
well, that's where it came up here, too. I was like, see, they should have done something.
And the tenor of the conversation obviously feels a lot different now after 6 straight postseason wins. But basically, I think they thought they don't have a contending team this year. Even if you can catch Cleveland, even if Cleveland is by any chance vulnerable, and they might not be vulnerable because they have LeBron James, and that's usually enough to win the Eastern Conference no matter what. They thought, okay, there's still Golden State out there. There's still Houston out there. Those teams are a lot better even than Cleveland. So why give up assets to help the team marginally to maybe give you a better chance against Cleveland when it probably doesn't put you past Cleveland? It diminishes some of your assets. So I think that was the thinking behind it. And now, if you can get to the Eastern Conference Finals anyway, and which now they're 2 wins away from it, then it looks great in retrospect, obviously. But I think there was rightful criticism of that, because they do have an opportunity right now, I think, in the Eastern Conference, especially with Isaiah Thomas just skyrocketing the way he has this season. And like if they had added a PJ Tucker or, you know, an impact guy in that rotation, then maybe they would have given themselves a better chance in the East. But I mean, right now, six wins later, it's a lot harder to criticize that. Especially, you know, they went on to win the number one seed in the Eastern Conference anyway. They're now 2 wins away from the Eastern Conference Finals. But yeah, when they meet the Cavs, it's going to be a little different story, I think, when you're throwing out, you know, some of the lineups that they have. So we'll see. I understand why they took the long-term perspective. It's not like Toronto, where Toronto is trying to maximize this core right now. Boston's still building for the future, but sometimes, though, like...
But I guess they have so much stuff. Yeah. Like, the Wizards are taking a big risk. If they don't, like, whatever happens this round, like, if they don't make the conference finals at least, Bogdanovich could leave. He's a restricted free agent. They may not be able to keep him. He could leave, so they would have only gave up a first-round pick for a 2 or 3 month rental. That's not ideal, obviously. but you kind of understood why they felt they had to do it. The bench was problematic. They needed some more something. There was talk of Lou Williams, whatever. They ended up this way. So, but in Toronto, sort of in the same boat, I don't think they had insane assets, but they were trying to win now. It just felt like Boston had so much stuff. Here's 4 of these random picks. Because part of the issue from the outside is, like, I was a big RJ Hunter fan. Well, I guess that didn't work, but he was a first-round pick who they just cut. And I'm sure there's been a couple other guys where they sort of dismissed. I'm like, well, if you're going to just throw the picks away, then why not take some stuff and go get more? But and anyway, that was from my down I-95 perspective. I was like, boy, they're really going to do nothing, even if they don't get the Jimmy Butler type guy. But like you said, I guess it's working right now.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of discussion about that in Boston, too. But obviously, the key for them is keeping cap space, and they want to hold on to as many assets as possible just in case they can make a run at whatever star becomes available. So you get why, but also, like, they really, really have a chance right now, I think, in the East, and especially if they had solidified the rotation, if the Cavs are indeed vulnerable. But who knows? We'll see what happens the rest of this series. We'll see what happens in the Eastern Conference Finals. But, yeah, it's tough, especially like Isaiah Thomas is playing at an unreal level. So to kind of, if they do not squander this year of his prime, but if they don't try to maximize it, I think that's a little hurtful. Even though they have bigger dreams for the future.
And that's kind of why for the Wizards, even if the Bogdanovich thing ultimately turns into just a total rental, it leads to other questions about other moves they've made in the past, but it's like, hey, for 2 months from December 1st, basically, to the All-Star break, they were arguably the best team in the East, at least record. They were record-wise, but, you know, Cleveland is whatever. But they were as good as anybody, so take advantage of that. They did. We'll see what happens. So what do you think? Game three tomorrow? I sort of said I think the Wizards, in theory, their role guys should play better at home. Well, what do you think about from the Celtics standpoint? Do you think you're going to get the Terry Rozier's to do what they're doing, the Marcus Smarts to sort of keep up that intensity, or on the road, is it a potentially different story?
I think they probably smell blood right now. And, I mean, from the Wizards' perspective, those first two games must have been really kind of devastating. Like, to lose the way they did after such great starts, and to have Isaiah Thomas kind of snatch game two away after it looked like they were going to go home with a split, that they must be reeling at least a little bit right now. And so the Celtics probably smell blood. We'll see if that matters. We'll see if they can come into Washington and get a win. I do think that they're not going to necessarily get Terry Rozier to play as well as he has and Kelly Olynyk to play as well as he has. And they certainly, I don't think Isaiah will do all that again. But both teams right now, it's really defense that both teams should be looking at. Neither team has done anything to slow down the other team, especially the best player. Like, John Wall did whatever the hell he wanted for the first three quarters, and Isaiah Thomas did whatever the hell he wanted for the fourth quarter in overtime. So both these teams need to figure out some way to stop the other or slow down the other. These defenses aren't great. Like, let's be honest, it's not great, especially with Boston downsizing the way they are. Both teams have little chances of stopping.
But it feels like with Bradley and Smart, I said going into the series, I thought for the Wizards, the key player for the series was Otto Porter, partly because of the Isaiah Thomas thing, they're going to hide him there. But also, I figured, okay, between Bradley and Smart, they're going to try to take Beal out of the game, which he was definitely off yesterday. So it seems like with Bradley and Smart, you have two guys, and that's exactly where the Wizards' strength is. So I almost kind of feel like Boston should be better. The Wizards, I'm sort of, maybe I'm just resigned to it because I've watched them all year. I'm like, it just is not working. Defensively, they can't stop anybody. But Boston, I just sort of feel like there should be more there because of the strength they have with those two guys.
Yeah, and I mean, Wall probably won't do what he did. He was shooting lights out for a while. Obviously, you don't expect him to shoot quite that well, although right. He's capable of it in stretches. But, yeah, I mean, I think they're okay with at least taking one of those guys out of the game. And when you look at it, I mean, Celtics committed 9 turnovers in the first quarter, and that contributed to a lot of the easy buckets for the Wizards. So in the half court, things haven't been quite so bad for the Celtics. But they need to keep John Wall out of transition. They need to limit those easy chances, because once John Wall gets in transition, it's lights out, man. I really enjoy Wall. I don't think he gets nearly enough credit for being as good as he is, and he's been that way for years now. Like, I've heard some people talking about how much better John Wall has gotten, and he has improved, but it's like, that guy's been doing this for a long time, and I think Scott Brooks has unlocked different parts of his game, but that guy has been an animal for years. He is just electric, man. I really love watching that guy play. The first quarter was as good as point guarding gets.
Yeah. I mean, he's definitely, and I'm with you on, he's done it for a while, but like, I think he's basically said as much. He'd been playing hurt for a while, getting the two surgeries in the offseason for his knees. He's playing better. He's gotten so good now, when he goes 1-on-3 on a fast break, I'm like, oh, okay. Sure. That's fine. Anybody else, I'd be like, oh my, what are you doing? And him, like, yeah, that's fine. That's, yeah.
Go do it, man.
Yeah, do what you gotta do. Nobody is slowing him down. Well, you need to slow down here. Once you get done with Boston, go take a nap, go sleep, whatever you're going to do. Gear up for tomorrow. Glad we got to do this. Locked on Celtics. But wait, what is it? Because it's not actually Locked on Celtics. It's a different...
Locked on Celtics with the Rain and Jays.
But is that that's the Twitter handle?
At Rain and Jays. Rainin, no G, underscore JS.
Yeah, I was trying to find it the other day. I was like, wait, what's going on here? Why can't I find this thing? And you're at by J King on Twitter.
Correct, yep.
All right, cool. And obviously, Locked on Wizards at Ben Standig. And, of course, follow us on iTunes, Audio Boom, and all that stuff. Glad we got to do this, man. Go get some rest, and we'll see what happens in game three.
Looking forward to it, man.
All right, man. Until next time. See ya.
Yeah, J King and John Corrales.
Celtics. Millie.